Penguin Random House Audio presents The Pilot's Daughter by Meredith Yeager. Read for you by Tavia Gilbert and Hilary Huber. For my mother, Carol, and my sister, Carolyn, I love you both. You always are seeing her where the lights are bright. Not the first Broadway butterfly. Those wings are long since dust. Many recall her dancing feet, her hair like copper. Even today's playgirls know her story. What happened to Dot King can happen to anyone who lives by the lights. The Philadelphia Inquirer, January 19th, 1941. Prelude. New York City, March 15th, 1923. He liked her in yellow. He always told her this, and she'd become aware of how she felt whenever she wore it, like a kept woman. Her silk chemise, the exact shade of a canary, barely reached her knees, and she shivered as a bitter cold draft blew through the open window. Did she leave it like that? She lay tangled in her bedsheets, listening. The sounds of the city had quieted. No nighttime whoopee, no honking automobiles. The apartment itself was silent, save for the squeaking ropes and pulleys of the dumbwaiter, which had woken her with its rattling. Normally, she'd never be up at dawn. What fool would carry Hooch up to the fifth floor at this hour? She'd forgotten to take off her diamond and pearl bracelet, and it sparkled in the early morning sunlight like a handcuff. Her world had grown smaller in these past few months, tightening around her like a snake. This room, she couldn't stand it. Secrets bubbled up inside of her, daring to spill out. But she'd never betray him. He had too much power. She touched her pillowcase. Last night's lipstick smeared across it like a blood stain. Then the dumbwaiter stopped, and a terrible feeling came over her. Something wasn't right. Chapter 1. Ellie. San Francisco, January 1945. Ellie wanted answers. She wanted witness statements, mission documents, aircraft records, and every single piece of classified information that the Army refused to give her. As she climbed the stairs to the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper office, tears pressed against her eyelids. She had been unable to get through to the Army officials in charge, the same men who'd sent her mother a Western Union telegram 6 weeks ago, blowing her life apart like a grenade. Mrs. Clara Morgan, 1944, December 15th. The Secretary of War desires me to express his deep regret that your husband, First Lieutenant William P. Morgan, has been reported missing in action since 14 December over the Adriatic Sea. If further details or other information are received, you will be promptly notified. The Adjutant General. Elliot clutched that yellow envelope with shaking fingers, a scream scraping up her throat, while back in the house, Bing Crosby crooned on the radio, "I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me." She'd sunk to her knees on the front porch, an icy feeling rendering her breathless, like the time she'd plunged into Lake Tahoe in early spring at age 10 to prove to her father she was no sissy. Her heart had been beating too fast then, too, the shock of the cold water almost unbearable. Now, 14 years later, she was determined to find out what had happened to her father and his crew. She'd written and called the Adjutant General's office, requesting the operational details of her father's mission report, the government photographs that had been taken that day, any piece of information that could help her. But she'd received nothing in response. The last thing Ellie wanted to do was speculate. She was terrified it would lead her down a dark hole from which she'd never return, but she needed to start somewhere. She had to assume the Germans had shot down her father's plane in a hail of bullets before he could return to his Italian base, so she'd marked up a map in blue pen, making X's along the beaches of the Adriatic Sea. No one is a better pilot, Ellie reminded herself. Father could survive a water landing. But her letters to the army, insisting her father could still be alive, received no reply. She climbed the stairs two at a time, afraid to be late. Ever since the telegram, she'd moved about the world, grief-haunted and numb. But she'd returned a few days later to her secretarial position at the San Francisco Chronicle. Her mother, on the other hand, retreated to her bedroom with a bottle of pills the doctor had prescribed. Ellie collected herself as best she possibly could, repinning a strand of auburn hair into her victory rolls and smoothing her green wool cardigan over her white-collared blouse. Ellie noticed her brown velveteen skirt had a stain on it and chided herself for not choosing differently. She would have much rather worn trousers, but as a secretary, she wasn't allowed to. Secretarial school had taught her to always look beautiful, to always please her boss, and to refrain from smoking. Yet her boss, Frank Hardcastle, smoked like a chimney and looked like a bum, as did most of her male colleagues. She wanted to go home, to change into one of her father's flannel shirts and to curl up in bed. Her lip trembled, remembering how when she was 8, she'd ridden in her neighbor Billy Zubritsky's orange crate on roller skate wheels down Lombard's famous curves. She'd skinned both her knees bloody when she'd toppled over and ruined her Sunday dress. Her mother had screeched like a banshee and given her a night without supper, but her father had secretly given her a dime. God, she missed him. A dark part of her wanted to say, to hell with it all, and to drown her grief in a bottle of vodka, just as mother drowned hers in pills. But unlike mother, Ellie had hope. A dangerous, slippery thing. She pushed open the door to the newsroom. Cigarette smoke and the smell of ink hung in the air around the horseshoe of battered desks where the copy editors huddled together, clacking away at their typewriters. The familiar scent of Lucky Strike, her father's brand, hit her like a sledgehammer. She would not cry. Not here. Ellie made her way toward the kitchenette to brew coffee for Frank, the managing editor.
Where the hell is my page one copy? Frank yelled over the noise.
He popped out from behind the glass door to his office, and Ellie quickly ducked into the kitchen, a small room with a sink and a hot plate. Though he wasn't the editor-in-chief, Frank oversaw all the day-to-day operations at the paper. Balding and pot-bellied, with a cigarette constantly dangling from his lips, he wore ill-fitting suits and a tie so loose that Ellie wondered why he bothered with one at all. She brewed his coffee, then hurriedly poured a cup, adding powdered milk just the way he liked it. She was almost to Frank's office door when she stumbled over a black briefcase. Damn! Immediately, she slapped a hand over her mouth. I mean, darn! But it was too late. Rick Johnson, one of the reporters, glared at her.
Be careful, will ya?
Forgive me. Ellie used a napkin to wipe away the droplets of coffee that had spilled over the rim of Frank's mug. Then she smiled apologetically at Rick. Never mind, his misplaced briefcase had nearly caused her to break her neck. But Rick had received his press accreditation from the War Department, and he'd already served overseas, reporting from the front lines, before taking a job with the Chronicle. He carried himself with an air of importance. After all, he'd ridden in jeeps with officers and witnessed enemy gunfire up close. Frank's shiny head was flushed from stress when he stuck it out from behind his office door and grabbed his coffee mug.
Took you long enough. Now hang up my coat.
Ellie's hands shook with frustration. Yes, sir. She transferred his hat and coat from where he'd tossed them on his desk to the coat stand in the corner. Pinning a tight smile of compliance on her face, she turned to him. Sir, is there anything else?
When's the traffic commissioner here for our meeting?
Ellie bit her lip to hold back from pointing out the appointment was written in his diary right in front of it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?